For June the 12th, 2015, we talk about some pre-E3 rumors, a smattering of games, and we ask you what your favorite fan art is. Welcome to the 108th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey, guys. What's going on? Hi.
Hello.
Yeah. I'm here.
You do not sound happy, Cole.
What? And this is just who I am.
Aww.
It's who I am. Yeah. Trying to think here. Good stuff to talk about. I saw Max Payne.
The movie?
Not Max Payne. Why do I keep... Okay.
Why is that? What?
Yeah. You know, the Mark... Was that Mark Wahlberg who did that?
It was.
Yeah, it was Marky Mark. He ritualistically killing the Funky Bunch. No, Mad Max. And I've made that same mistake several times when talking about that movie.
What did you think of it?
I really, really enjoyed it. I know.
Good.
Go ahead.
No, I was just saying... Good.
Yeah.
Also, I'm still trying to figure out how you confuse them, but that's okay.
So they're both two-word monosyllabic names, and Max is in both of them.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah, and so you know, Max is the most important part of both of those. I think one is a name. Actually, you know, both of them are the names, and so Max coming first, and Max Payne I think makes it take precedence for me. Yeah. As if we didn't annoy people enough, let's talk about how Cole doesn't put words together.
Oh,
right?
Whatever. No, that's
it spawns the idea of let's make a movie called Mad Max Payne.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Crossover. Yeah.
No, I was thinking you know, with Full House being remade, our spec script. Netflix or
yes.
something?
Oh no.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a thing that's happening in the world somewhere.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's being remade as Fuller House, and they're getting the band back together.
Literally.
Except for the Olsen twins.
Yes, they're
surprise.
Well, you know, like just they differentiated enough, I think, that that you can't you can't double them. Although that would be great if you just swapped them in and out.
Yeah,
yeah, they're literally. What was the band on Full House?
I don't remember.
Was it like the Heartbreakers or something?
Yeah, like Jesse
something
and
that.
Jesse and the Heartbreakers.
Something.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. How do you remember that?
I do not know.
Yeah. but no, with that coming back, the time is right for the script or the idea that Chris and I came up with, which is a gritty remake of Parker Lewis Can't Lose called Parker Lewis Quits Booze. Which is you revisit the cast of Parker Lewis Can't Lose, except however many years it's been later, and see how their lives have fallen apart.
Aww.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I have no idea what Parker Lewis Can't Lose is.
It was a show on Fox. It was like, it was kind of co-concurrent with what is that? The Al Bundy show. I keep wanting
married
to call
married,
married
children.
To children. Yeah, I keep. But whenever that comes up, man, this is just Cole can't name things right. I want to call it Love and Marriage because of the theme song, but that's because that's what my grandparents called it. they also called Home Improvement Tool Time. It was kind of concurrent with that, and it was Fox's attempt to remake Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Except, you know, not Ferris Bueller, but it was very much similar to that in a similar vein. So early 90s. Yeah.
Seems like a hard thing to
stretch
out. I'm
going to go rock
out,
in a corner now.
What do you mean, a rock in a corner?
The early 90s are a terrible time. Why do you need to talk about them?
Yeah, that's funny.
It is kind of scary that, like, in the odds, I was like, oh, the 90s were great. The 80s were terrible. Mm-hmm. And now I'm kind of like, man, the 90s weren't that different from the 80s.
Yeah, so. No.
Well, more recently, I started watching In Living Color again, and I grew up watching that. So to go back and look at just some of the, you know, early culture now the show is still awesome, but some of the fashion and other various things, I'm just like, ugh. And the thing is, even at the time that it was actually recent, you know, in the early 90s, I still thought it was terrible. So that didn't change. We're talking early 90s. Like, mid-90s are all right. Early 90s were pretty bad.
I don't think... I think the 90s ran from, like... from like 96 to 2001. I think the 90s ended in 9/11. I don't know. It's weird. Like, it's, you know, the whole 90s kids thing, like, we make fun of that, you know, for being being clickbait shit. But it's like, I don't know. Everything I remember about the 90s because of, like, when I grew up, it was like, here's MTV and it's going to be Syphil and Ollie and Daria and that's going to be great. Like, everything's going to be fine. Oh well.
Yeah, it does seem like old animated MTV is what animated Cartoon Network is now.
Yeah, like Beavis and Butthead just writ large. And not quite as good as Beavis and Butthead anymore. Oh well. But I feel like that's enough past chat. We've got the usual show for you. We've got the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. Let's go ahead and do it. It is now time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games, and this the week before E3. Jala, do you have a story you want to throw in first?
I actually have two stories, and neither of them have to do with E3, so there.
Oh, okay. So, I'll just throw my intro away. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you didn't ask me about it beforehand. That's your fault. All right. Following my trends of talking about games and their influence out in the world, here is the first class of inductees to the Strong World Video Game Hall of Fame in upstate New York. We've got Doom, Pong, Super Mario Brothers, Pac-Man, Tetris, and World of Warcraft. Hmm. Basic criteria for induction to the Hall of Fame include icon status, longevity, geographical reach, and influence. You can submit nominees for next year's inductees through March of next year. The curator of this video game Hall of Fame is an entity that also focuses on any number of other forms of play, such as board games, toys, storybooks, and so on. It sounds pretty cool, so I actually kind of want to go and just see this toy Hall of Fame and all these other various random things, because it sounds like a lot of fun. But I had never heard of it before, and apparently this is, like I said, the first round of inductees to it, and I think they picked some pretty good ones. They were, you know, going off of course, their impact on later gaming and such. So,
I mean, most of these have some, you know, tremendous influence. Pong seems a little bit like the outlier in that regard, though.
Yeah, I know, really. I mean, Pong was, I guess it's just because for a long time, Pong was like the game before they came out with other things. And I guess because, maybe the programming on that had something to do with what they ended up doing with pinball, because pinball used to be the main thing that was like, hey, look what my computer can do. Mm-hmm. So that might have something to do with it too.
I was at work today and I was called into another room to answer a question about Pong. They were asking if there was ever a 4-player Pong, and I'm like, I don't know. Don't ask me. I came back to my
I don't think so.
I drew how I thought it would work, which is a paddle on each side of the screen, but I digress.
Regional Pong expert Cole Ross.
Yeah. I walked back out to my desk, and my producer was like, oh, what was that all about? I said, oh, I had to describe Pong to somebody. And she's like, what's Pong?
What?
Wow. Okay.
And, you know, and it, like, just in a way that was not patronizing, which I admit it's going to be hard for me. I had to ask, like, oh, you know, Pong, like with the paddles and the boops and boops. And I was like, oh, like, and she was getting like frustrated. Like, you know, I was like, oh, I don't know video games. And I was like, well, and I said, like, oh, it's kind of like the same thing as Pac-Man. That's why I assumed everybody knew about it. But yeah, it was very bizarre.
Did she say, what's Pac-Man then?
No, she said, I know Pac-Man. She said, I know Pac-Man. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and then, too, another thing that kind of was interesting to me was that they chose World of Warcraft instead of EverQuest.
Yeah.
That, I mean, like, no, not knocking World of Warcraft and its influence, because obviously it is a large influence, but EQ kind of, like, paved the way for that.
Yeah, well, but also EQ had Ultima Online and RuneScape in front of that.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
The weird thing about this, if you look at this series of games, or this spread of games as a whole bunch of, like, influencers, or things that started a genre or started in an industry, like, you could probably make a pretty strong argument for World of Warcraft killing a genre or killing an industry, or at least stunting it or defining it, becoming it, subsuming everything else.
Well, EQ is still out in EQ 2. I mean, my sister and brother-in-law still play that. So, I mean, that's still hovering around, and that's been around forever and ever. Amen. But, you know. Oh, well. But anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody out there is going to be like, no, Jala, it's WoW. It's WoW. Okay, yes. Sorry. I know you're a WoWer. It's fine.
Yeah.
So I don't have a passionate feeling about this. I was just curious as to, you know, their judgment call on that.
Yeah.
Like what their reasoning specifically was.
So,
I mean, EQ lady, I know EQ lady. Like if I see that icon, I know who that is. So.
Yeah.
Do we think GoldenEye is going to be inducted next year then?
No idea. You can nominate him.
I'm just going to go in and fill the suggestion box with the butts. That's what people do with ours. I really want SimCity to get in, actually. I think that would be one. It's hot on, we're hot on the heels of that episode of Watch Out for Fireballs, but boy, oh boy, do I really like me some SimCity.
I'm kind of curious to see what gets inducted every year. So, I mean, that'll be something interesting to see next year when that pops out again. But
it's something for me. Like, I would be interested to go to even see what an exhibit about these things looks like if they get like original design documents or because it's a little bit weird. Like the whole and here's let's make a Planet Hollywood but for video games.
Yeah.
Planet Mushroom Kingdom.
Well, that's kind of why I every time I go to, for example, like an antique mall or something and I go and I see old toys and stuff, that's always really fun for me. And when I see old gaming merchandise, that's cool. And so to go to one of these halls of fame, like this place in upstate New York, that's totally going to be on my list of places I need to plan to go to in the next few years because I like toys and I like games and I want to go see all of these things.
It seems like this is happening, right? Because what is it? The New York MoMA started putting video games in. Which it deserves to be there. My question is, like, this is more akin to a conversation about award shows or whatever, but like I'm kind of curious if there's ever going to be like an AFI top so-and-so films registry, like, oh, here we've decided that these are culturally relevant, for the Library of Congress, and we're going to do what we can to preserve them. Like, that's the metric for me.
Yeah. Well, I think that, as we progress, we keep on seeing more and more gaming introduced into different types of industries and applied for different uses to the extent that that is something that could very logically end up being a result of this, just as a natural extension of everything that's been going on and how games are being used and infiltrating basically everything. So,
yeah. How about the other story?
The other story is simply that Amazon is making a game studio, or actually has made a game studio, and are hiring devs. They yanked some of their new team from apparently some pretty good AAA sources, as they reference members having worked on Portal, Left 4 Dead, Half-Life 2, Dota 2, World of Warcraft, Halo, Infamous, and Shadows of Mordor. So,
yeah. I mean, they seem to be trying to assemble like the traveling Wilburys.
Yeah, pretty much.
Games that have been popular over the past 7 years.
Yeah. Well, and then too, Amazon took over Comixology, which is the major digital comics publishing place. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a surprise that they're just turning into massive giga company. But
I'm curious. I wonder if they've got their eye on that Steam dollar, because that has to be a little bit irritating for them, being like what you said, this omnivorous vending machine, which doesn't make sense. Why would a vending machine be omnivorous? It's crazy. We don't have any idea what kind of game game they're making. Just that they have made this move, and they've made a logo apparently.
Yeah,
they tweeted about it.
It's official. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I know, is that they're trying to assemble their team. They already have a bunch of people on their on their roster, but I'm kind of curious as to what they're going to do, and what kind of, are they going to hit PC, are they going to hit all the consoles, are they hitting everybody, what are they doing, what type of game are they doing, mobile, like what type of games are they doing?
It'll be the Firebox or whatever it is.
Right.
I don't know. I'm wary of Amazon's forays to do something besides be a shipping company. the logistics company, because that's what they're best at. That and also running the entire internet, I guess. So I should just shut up. But yeah.
The drone before you, Cole.
What's that?
Yeah.
I said the drones are coming for you.
I suppose.
Compensate that.
Yeah. But man, oh man. I hope this isn't another MOBA. I really hope.
Yeah.
Like there's very little in their pedigree that tells me that that's what they would be moving towards. Like the majority of these are kind of open world style things, but I can't imagine Amazon publishing and putting something out that isn't just a vending machine for something else. You know?
Yeah.
Like I can't see them putting together some massive narrative sweeping scope kind of thing, but
well, yeah, maybe we'll see.
It's kind of interesting because it doesn't seem like it's that profitable of a venture trying to make video games.
But Amazon doesn't make profit.
Yeah.
That's what makes them so valuable. They don't make any money. let's see here. Ben, have you found a story yet?
I have not.
Okay, well then I'll go.
I have failed this week.
It's fine. I'll do two so you don't have to. Ben is having some internet problems, and we're just hoping and praying it doesn't affect his audio quality. But Ben, you're going to be happy to hear this.
Okay.
Yeah, The Last Guardian's going to be at E3. Allegedly, according to rumors.
I need more information. Substantiate this, please.
Yeah, so The Guardian, the UK paper, says we have it on very good authority that this will be the year that Team ECO finally presents its follow-up to much-loved classics ECO and Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm.
Which, you know.
Yeah.
That's really all there is to say about that. Like I hope it is, just like you hope it is, Ben.
Leave it when I see it.
Yep. I mean, you know, it's like, we've been hardened by years of neglect,
literally 10 years about, you know.
Just about. Yeah, I suppose you're right. Shadow of the Colossus came out 10 years ago, like roundabouts right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was summer 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Jala, I forget, have you ever played any of the Team ECO games? Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure. I mean, so I haven't gotten your take on this. Like, were you ever once excited for The Last Guardian?
Once upon a time, many, many moons ago, and then something shined at me, and then I looked at it and forgot about the other thing.
Yeah. Which, you know, it's just an object lesson and not getting excited about anything. Yeah. So we'll file that one away, I suppose. I've got another one here, and this is just of kind of general interest for the network more than anything else. But over the past week or so, there have been leaks of screenshots and some marketing materials indicating that not only does Dark Souls 3 exist, you know, we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, but it has a release date of early 2016.
Cool.
Okay. So that's good news for me because of Bonfireside Chat. And also, I want more of these games, although general opinion from what I've seen from people is that opinion, like, just like they're kind of cooling on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody really seems to be like that kind of enthused about the possibility even. That may just be me, you know, looking out for negative stuff and maybe the channels that I read, you know, the stuff that's brought to us. But yeah, people are cautious at best and actively hostile to the idea at worst.
Well, at the same time, if it's just like, hey, there's this thing, it's going to come out, then, you know, like once they actually start seeing stuff, then perhaps that will change.
Yeah.
Have you requested off work yet, Cole?
No, it's pretty much it's a standing commitment at this point. And I never really have to request off of work. I just disappear for a while and make sure my projects are covered and hope nobody adds it up. Yeah. But I don't know. I'm trying to stay a little bit media dark on it. I'm assuming that everything I'm seeing in these leaked screenshots, which look really convincing to me, is going to be represented in the E3 press conference, assuming that is where this is revealed. So I'm not too, you know, scared about that. But I'm excited at the very least. I want more of this and to see what they do. But yeah, early 2016.
You excited about something Dark Souls? Never.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to be like a repeat of last year. You know, if it comes out in March because of the fiscal year, then, you know, we won't have too much time to kill with Bloodborne. So we'll cover some more cool games and then get started.
multiplayer.
It is now time for the multiplayer, where we ask you guys, everybody, all of you, not just the guys, the women and others too, a question that Dennis actually put out before. Dennis writes, what's the coolest gaming-related fan work you've ever seen? This could be cosplay, video, drawings, etc. And have you ever done one yourself?
Ta-da!
Yeah, so people make fan works. I'm gonna cut in with mine. It's these adorable pictures of Dennis's baby Luke wearing Mario clothes.
I was gonna say that's gotta be up there somewhere. Yeah. Because that's kind of where that even came from, I'm pretty sure. So
because apparently it's okay when a baby does it, Cole. Go ahead.
I just want to jump in. It would have made more sense if it was the Luigi, since it has an L and Luke.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Oh, but you want to doom him to a life of being second fiddle and ghosts?
That's true. Fair point.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm going to read the actual first response. This is from David Petroco saying, remaking Final Fantasy VII and Little Big Planet 2 is probably the most epic thing I can think of. We talked about that, right?
Yeah, we covered that at some point.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, it's funny, even though I think I have Little Big Planet 2, but I've never gone in and actually played that. Was that taken down because of copyright, or is it still up there?
I do not know.
No idea. That would be a good thing to check.
At the very least, I think they have YouTube videos of it if you want to watch it.
But... Okay, yeah. But it's Final Fantasy VII. Why would I watch all of that? Yeah.
Fair point.
Hmm.
Why would you make all of it as well?
Well, you know, devotion, right? Mm-hmm. Jalo, what's Tanner say?
Tanner says, well, he has two responses. So, honestly, if it counts as a fan work, I'd have to say Video Games Live. Seeing world-class orchestras playing the Shadow of the Colossus theme among countless of other unforgettable songs was pretty unbelievable. I'd like to think at least a handful of the musicians are doing it beyond a paycheck, but the VGL guys are undoubtedly doing it from a place of sincere fandom.
Yeah, I mean, that probably counts as a derivative work, right?
Something like that. I know that I've seen orchestral performances. I don't know if it's just that or if it's just kind of like random orchestras, not just them doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen other performances advertised. I just haven't ever attended one myself.
Yeah.
But
you're drawing a line in the sand, Cole.
What do you mean drawing a line? What?
Cover video game bands are don't count. Or
no, okay. No, I'm not drawing that line. Like the mini bosses are really good. Like.
Well, Tanner does say if it counts as a fan work, that's the first thing he did say. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I guess it depends. The people who organize that, are they at all affiliated with the actual, you know, companies themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, in which case, it is just a very well organized and well funded fan work that is done with the blessing of the creators themselves.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. No, I would not. Put the kibosh on video game cover bands from being fan works, because that is made with genuine love and enthusiasm for the source material.
Yep.
It's all good. Hey, Ben, what's Alan say?
Alan says, I think that tool-assisted speedruns are probably the most remarkable pieces of fan work I have seen. I can't even imagine how long it would take them to make. The Mario World All Exist speedrun is like watching ballet at times. All Exits speedrun, excuse me.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember for a brief moment I was I was disenchanted, because like I was introduced to the idea of speedruns by watching the very famous like 10-minute Mario 3 speedrun.
Yeah.
Where they're like jumping from bullet to bullet for all of World 8. And I was like, oh my god, I can't believe somebody could do that. When in reality, no, obviously somebody couldn't do that for that long without failing, right? And I, you know, like, tool assisted, that's crazy. And then I looked into what tool assisted actually meant a couple years later, and I was like, oh, this is just a very tremendous feat of patience in the pursuit of like perfection. And then all of my disdain faded away.
So how does it work exactly? I guess they're like programming a set of inputs for it, or
kind of like they're doing it frame by frame, and they can back it up and make a different decision if a decision doesn't work out, or an input doesn't work out.
Okay.
So if think of it like they all have the dagger from Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. Yeah, at least that's my understanding of it. It's more technical than that, and I may be failing too. understand it, but that is the best approximation that I have. Let's see here. Phil Holmes writes in, does the Duck Feed Network count? I don't know. Other than that, I'm a big fan of the cross-stitch of the Link to the Past maps, and I really enjoyed Street Fighter X Mega Man, a fan project that even Capcom was willing to sponsor.
What is that? I need to know. Phil Holmes, you need to tell me more about this thing.
I mean, I assume it was it's some kind of putting one character from one game into another.
Probably. I don't know. Maybe not.
Let's see here. Yeah, this was put on Cap. I need to see this, actually, see what it is. It is a fighting game done in Mega Man graphics, except it has Street Fighter characters in it, fighting Mega Man bosses and stuff. That's pretty neat.
Oh, you mean like Rockman Battle or whatever they called it?
Except there better. Was... Except not the worst. I was so disappointed. I went to a hotel that I stayed at with my family. They had that in the in the laundry room as one of their arcade machines. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is everything I've ever wanted. Being a huge Mega Man fan and playing, and it's like, oh, this is really bad.
Well, it's kind of like what Mega Man Soccer and Mega Man the Racing Game, and let's just put Mega Man on everything.
Yeah, I forgot about Mega Man Racing. I look forward to that game for years. Did that ever come out in America? Because I remember seeing ads in GamePro.
I know of, although I do know they made toys for it that were like remote-controlled little toys over in Japan.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I wonder if that's playable at all. It's always nice when a company like stands behind it, or you know, is willing to say, you know what, yeah, let's let this slide.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Jala, what does Mikhail say?
Mikhail says that Pokemon Ballet was pretty dope, and he gives a YouTube link.
And I'll put this in the show notes as well. I was able to look at a little bit of this. It is a half hour, of Pokemon themed ballet where Team Rocket tries to steal a Pokemon, but
that's awesome.
But yeah, it looks very professionally done, from what I know of ballet, which is admittedly very little.
I think my knowledge of ballet ends at the Black Swan. So,
You mean ballet? You mean
the movie, not the play?
like ballet? You mean like the bear that drives the car? that is a Simpsons deep cut. Ben, what's Christian say?
Christian says, I think Dom Hassett's songs and music videos for the Soulsborne games are pretty amazing. And then he goes on to say, my personal favorite is Raise Your Essus, basically a Dark Souls drinking song.
Oh. Yeah.
And there's also a link for that.
Drinking songs are good.
Yeah. This is my own personal taste. If something feels like it's veering into a video game parody song, then I start to get a little, but I don't like parody songs in general.
So you don't like Weird Al?
I think Weird Al is a tremendously talented musician. Insofar as he is able to perfectly replicate a bunch of sounds, I don't find the stuff that he's done particularly entertaining, even if I recognize that it is funny and people could enjoy it.
Gotcha.
It's just not for me.
Yep. Yeah. Well, to each their own.
That and, you know, Weird Al seems like a genuinely nice dude.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to like have any ill will. It's just kind of like, you know, again, just not for me. How about you guys? Video game parody songs or parody songs in general?
It depends. Take it or leave it. Yeah, I was going to say, it really depends. It's not like I go out there and seek them out, but sometimes if I happen to come across one and it happens to strike me as funny, that's awesome. But yeah. It's like, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. I don't specifically go after them with, you know, pitchforks and torches or anything, but also I don't particularly seek them out like, yeah, these are so cool. No. They're cool, or they're not cool, depending. I don't know. I'll have to click the link and find out later.
Yep. Let's see. Paul writes in. Paul Monkus, if you've commented before, I'm sorry for saying this. Welcome. I don't think you've commented before, but if you have, I'm sorry. But otherwise, don't be bad when I say this. Welcome. So it says, I don't know if this counts as fan art, but this oil on wood painting, I did this oil on wood painting once in response to the Deepwater Horizon spill, titled Top Kill Solution, sort of because their responses seemed not serious enough and they were throwing stuff at it to see what could work. As for my favorite, does Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden count? Oh, yes, it does. Most certainly. Barkley Shut Up and Jam Gaiden does.
And also, it's a neato painting, by the way.
Yeah, it's a painting. Yeah. It is a painting of what appears to be a Mario 1 underwater level.
Yep.
And Mario is shooting fireballs at a big pipe that is spilling a bunch of oil up, and you see some of the calamari and stuff there. It's really cool. I will find a way to put a link to this in the show notes as it goes. Let's see. Jala, what does Brandon say?
Brandon says, Gavin Dunn from the Podquisition podcast performs as a one-man band called Miracle of Sound. He does all original songs based on games and was featured on the Wasteland 2 soundtrack. Also a super nice guy on the podcast.
I liked the Wasteland 2 soundtrack.
Cool.
Cool. Yeah.
Also a podcaster. Also cool.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Joshua say?
Joshua says, I found these gaming acapellas by Smooth McGroove, awesome name, on YouTube to be really cool. I included this particular link for you, Cole. I think you might appreciate it. Honorable mention to the swordsmith who creates game sword replicas. Not going to look him up right now, but his Buster sword was pretty cool.
Yes, I have seen these Smooth McGroove acapella videos. They're sweet. They're really, really good. It's this guy. If you haven't seen them, seen these, and again, it's in the links. But he's got this magnificent beard, and he records arrangements, acapella arrangements of instrumental video game songs. And it appears like he's on here like 8 or 9 times doing each part, and it basically syncs up with himself to perform these. And this Gwyn one's really good because it's like a very minimalist piano melody. So he's doing a little bit of like embellishment around it with all the different parts. Super cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. And he's done a bunch of other games. Like, this stuff is legit crazy.
Very cool.
Yeah.
If nothing else, watch it for the beard.
And also, I mean, I look at this and I say, man, this must have just been a goddamn nightmare to compose and edit. Like, yeah, like there's, again, kind of like the speedrun thing. There's a certain amount of patience and dedication to mastery appearing in these that I really, really enjoy. Yeah. Micah Wheeler writes in saying, difficult to choose a particular type of art, but for cosplay, I once saw a Cloud cosplay that looked perfect, and he had a very nice replica sword, partially made with metal, so it had some weight to it. It was fantastic. And even better, their buddy was dressed in a perfect Sephiroth cosplay. A perfect pair.
Yeah, it's kind of awesome, and my answer, whenever I get to it, we'll finish out Christopher's, then I'll say mine, but mine relates to cosplay too. I think that when I go to conventions, that's probably the time that I have the most fun with fan-made stuff, partially because you get to see all these people who spend, like, to make some of the crazy costumes that are out there in the world, some of the complicated, you know, armors and whatnot, and to make them look really good, that takes a lot of skill.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. So,
yeah, I saw a really convincing Samus, and she had a friend dressed up like a Metroid.
Awesome.
And it wasn't like a, you know, like a very poorly done, like, oh, here, I'm just going to cloak myself in something. She was like dressed up in Metroid kind of colors and kind of like a cute little outfit, and had this kind of construction of clear cellophane, you know, approximating a Metroid, like what a Metroid would look like. It was fantastic.
That's awesome.
Also, there exists a picture of me doing the Praise the Sun gesture next to a guy who's dressed up like the Dark Souls 2 cover knight. Yeah.
Very nice.
Like the Faram knight, which is great. Like, that guy was really cool as well. Yeah, those people don't joke around. They're very dedicated.
Well, I'll mention that later when I talk about mine. We'll finish out with Christopher.
Yeah.
Okay. Christopher Schley says, this fake trailer for a live-action Super Mario Brothers film made for SXSW a few years back is by far the best thing I've ever seen.
And I'll put the link in there as well. It is very indie filmy.
Indie yeah. filmy is sometimes really awesome, though. So,
oh yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that as a pejorative. It's just,
oh no,
it comes across as ridiculously earnest, which is great.
Fits right in with South by Southwest.
Yeah. So yeah, this is pretty good. I don't know, Jolly. You were kind of champing at the bit to.
Yeah. Well, that's because I have only cosplayed once in my life. And it was on a complete whim. A friend of mine who had never been to a convention decided she was going to cosplay a character. And so I decided that I didn't want her as a, you know, con virgin to go and get jumped by everybody because she was wearing a costume. So I decided I was going to dress up as a character from the same, you know, thing. This is like a series that we watched, you know, like a show we watched back in the day. And so, like, I dressed up as a character, too, and then, you know, made my costume in, like, a week and went. But other than that, though, like, I have a great appreciation for the people who make cosplay costumes. Mm-hmm. It's gotten so big that they have, you know, like, professional cosplay photography studios that just do cosplay photos mm-hmm. and things like that. And they're releasing books about different types of costuming. I think they even have, like, worldwide competitions at this point. So yeah. Some of that stuff is just kind of crazy. But the most fun I have had personally encountering any fan work was with cosplayers at a con. Mm-hmm. There was a giant gathering of Street Fighter and SNK characters, so they could do a big cosplay showdown and mock-up role-playing versus battles, like Capcom versus SNK style. And there was a guy dressed like Dan from Street Fighter, who, if you don't know, basically he's a joke character that parodies Ryo and Robert, the main characters of SNK's Art of Fighting, because Capcom felt that Ryo and Robert were just ripoffs of Ryu and Ken.
Yeah.
So Dan was a parody of a parody. And he's the only character that I know of that has a super taunt ability. You can use a super bar to do a taunt, and this taunt takes forever to, you know, to execute. But, you know, like you roll around on the screen a lot, and then at the end, you pull out a photo and sign it and then throw it at the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it does like a modicum of damage, but it's just funny. So this guy in this, you know, cosplay get together improvs rolling all over the place when fighting Geese Howard, which is like a boss character from the Fatal Fury series. And right when he's doing his super taunt and about to like throw a photo at him, Geese, you know, unleashes his super attack or whatever. And then, you know, Dan falls over like he's died. Then out of nowhere, a wandering one-up mushroom man comes over, holds up a one-up mushroom, gives him a thumbs up, and Dan pops back up and beats Geese, which was probably one of the most hilarious things that I've seen, where it's just like random cosplay improv stuff.
Yeah.
And it made it better because the guy who was the one-up mushroom had a big afro that was painted like green with white dots. And yeah, it was super awesome. That guy was so cool. So that was probably the most fun that I've had, just because, you know, like, these are people who love it so much that they have a fun time making it into like a big carnival kind of thing. And that's, mm-hmm. that's something that's pretty awesome. There are all different kinds of awesome art, you know, art pieces and compositions, you know, music compositions and things like that, sculptures. I could have shown you any number of different things like that. Yeah. But when it comes to just something that was really cool and fun, I think that was probably the most fun memory that I've got related to something fan oriented. Yeah. And I do make fan art occasionally, because I am a painter and I do a comic and whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't do it with any great frequency, actually. I don't know why. I just don't really spend much of my time doing that. I suppose it's just because I like to just make stuff that's original and new, and I always have 50 million different ideas in my head. But mm-hmm. I do have some little tidbits that I did a few years back up on my Steam, because you can actually upload artwork there. So yeah. I have a couple of pieces up there. But
There's definitely a bravery associated with that kind of like really good cosplay. Like, it is, you know, there's art and craft input in assembling that, but also going out there in front of people and inhabiting it and doing a performance like that is, you know, commendable. Yeah.
Well, and then when they have the cosplay shows, they even have, you know, like skits that they do on stage mm-hmm. and stuff. So then you've got acting involved in it too. And these people just do everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Neat. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so I got one. I had to dig back for this one. But in 2001, there was a Star Wars Battlegrounds. It was a real-time strategy for Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hot on the heels of Episode 1, so I think they had like kind of updated things for that. But one of the things they had was a map creator, and you could like program in logic where if this happens, trigger this, and if this happens, trigger this. So I recreated the opening scene of Episode 1 in the map creator. So like you would walk in as a Jedi, and then like you'd go into a room, and there'd be an ambush, and then you would escape or whatever, you know. But that was something I spent, you know, a couple weeks over the summer doing. So that was the most that I've done, I think.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you see that too, like full conversions of turning one game into another game or, you know, recreating stuff. Like you see that with like Grand Theft Auto, like every Grand Theft Auto PC release has been accompanied by, well, let's just make the, like the previous games in this new engine kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that would like the Morrowind, like I would consider the you know the Elder Scrolls conversion stuff to be like really really dedicated fan projects too.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. For mine, I've got like a couple of piecemeal examples. Like there isn't one massive one that can hold up as like this blew my mind and is the craziest thing I've seen. But like my biggest exposure to fan art stuff has been at the Portland Retro Game Expo, and you know there are a lot of kind of vendors who've been there. You know, a couple times, you know, every, you know, like most of the times I've been there, and, these guys called the Wooden Arcade do really good work. These are the guys who made my Phantom mask that I have in my house. Like they're just like really good, like good sized, lacquered, just nice looking recreations of pixel art done in wood. And they look like they just kind of got this laminate over the top of them that makes it just look like pixel art, but it's nice and sturdy. And you can hang it up, and they do like arrangements. They've got like the like rupees and health meter stuff from Zelda. That's really cool stuff. And they've always had something really good at their booth. I'll put a link to their stuff in here as well.
Because I am an art person, and because I do comic stuff, I kind of whiffle back and forth about, you know, because a lot of artists that I know make a good portion of money just making fan art of stuff and selling their artwork that's based on someone else's characters. And part of the problem that I've got with that is as an independent artist, I don't want to be known as that person that draws this, you know, video game or whatever. I want to be known in my own right for my own stuff, not just my own style, but for all my own original content. And so, you know, like for me, it's kind of like a weird artistic moral ground where it's like, yes, I can draw the fan art for fun. I don't really want to draw the fan art for like, you know, here I'm doing this and I'm selling this as my merchandise at a place. Now, if it's something that it's, you know, say, for example, the wooden, you know, stuff you're talking about, that's not something that you can get. That's something that is, you know, you cannot get that from anywhere else. That's not something that the company will ever make. But I don't make crafts with wood. I make, you know, paintings and drawings. So part of the reason I don't do very much fan art is partially because I don't want that to be like where I get known, you know?
And, you know, you could say, oh, well, he's just like this guy or this team. They're just taking existing sprite work and turning it into something else. It's the craftsmanship that impresses me. Like,
oh, definitely.
The fact that they take it and make it into a durable artifact that looks really, really good.
Oh, I know. And, you know, like I'm not knocking because I have plenty of friends who do that. They make fan art and that's they go to conventions and that's their setup is to do that. I personally don't think that I want to go that route, but, you know, like you know, it's not like it's hurting anything much. I mean, like you've got what big corporations that they don't care if you make fan art. They think it's great advertising for their games or their whatever, you know, in most cases at least. So,
I feel a similar way about like the good Perler art that I've seen. Like there are a lot of booths of like people who kind of just do like really kind of small Perler kind of stuff, and like there was a glut of them at PRG a couple years ago. Now they've kind of like, you know, faded back, but there's this group of people that make really awesome Perler shadow boxes. talked about this before, but they had one. I think somebody ended up buying it, but it was just this massive Perler Shadowbox creation kind of thing that was like a Final Fantasy IV, like the massive Four Fiend sprites and all the people. It was like, this thing must have been like 4 feet by 3 feet or 3 feet or something like that. They said to buy it, it would cost like $3,000 or something.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. But like, just, you know, and then that's like parted out over their time. They're just like, yes, we make this as a showpiece for our booth because it's really impressive. And like, yeah, I'm impressed. And if I wasn't shoving it into a suitcase, I would totally buy one of these smaller ones, but you know,
yeah.
So it goes.
Yeah.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Allison's Lego Star Wars, not Lego Star Wars, God, Lego Dark Souls. Lego Dark Souls stuff, which is awesome in terms of, you know, Lego sculpture and stuff like that. But also what really impresses me about that is the photography, like taking photographs of something that small and making them look, you know, atmospheric and epic like she does is very impressive to me. So,
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like for a long time, and I still kind of whiffle back and forth, like maybe I should just do some fan art stuff. It's not, you know, a big deal. But as of yet, I haven't set up shop at a convention or anything as, you know, a fan artist or anything. So,
yeah, I mean, like the people who do really good at it, it seems like they can pay the bills and fund the thing, like their other stuff.
And that's pretty much what a lot of comic artists that I know have said, like, get some fan art stuff out there as your meal ticket, if you will, and then people will come over, and if they like your art, they'll ask about what you do yourself. Get that as a lure, if you will, to get people to come and see what you've got. But I don't know, we'll see. That's a whole nother discussion,
I suppose. Well, yeah, that was a multiplayer. I think we did it, guys.
Yes, I think we did.
Finally, we finished one.
the previous 107 haven't finished yet. They're still going.
We put a pin in each one, yeah.
So if you would like to participate in those, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast in order to see those prompts go up on Tuesday afternoons. Dennis is very good about doing that, and we appreciate him for doing it, and we appreciate you for responding like you do.
The grind.
It's now time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week. Jala, since you are the one who has been away for the longest, why don't I throw off to you first?
Okay, if you really want to.
I do.
Okay, so I mentioned it in a Facebook post that I threw up on the Level page somewhere, but probably the most entertaining gaming I've done lately relates to my first dating sim.
Oh, boy.
I played a dating sim. It's an otome game called Destiny Ninja. Now, an otome game, for anybody who doesn't know, is it's a word. Otome is a Japanese word that means girl, but another word that it is related to is maiden. It's kind of like an innocent girl type of game.
Go ahead.
It's basically a girl who is super blushy and freaks out about everything, you know, having a romance with a guy who is super blushy and freaks out about everything, and that's about it. So that's basically what that is.
Okay, tell me, can you confirm, is she or isn't she moe? Is she moe?
No, not this one.
Oh,
no, not what's moe?
From what I understand, that is a Japanese word that means cute.
Okay.
Like blushing and freaks out and just, oh, so cute, you could just eat her up.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's sort of kind of, but there's also spinoff stories where she's absolutely not. She kind of whiffles back and forth, the main character does. But anyway, I've been playing it on my phone. I'd actually seen it pop up several times when I was looking for visual novels to play. Mm-hmm. And as I was feeling pretty depressed one particular evening when my plans for the weekend were totally canceled, I said, what the hell? And I downloaded it. Now, the first thing that happened was that I laughed my ass off at the horrible English. It was terrible. Okay. Like, absolutely horrible. To start, you have to select what ninja you want to have a romance with, and so they list out descriptions of every single one of them's personality, and this list includes wicked mean ninja.
Well, he's just from Boston, and he's not very nice.
Indifferent, merciless, stubborn ninja. Mean, but with an angel heart brother-like ninja.
Brother-like?
Yes!
Having the qualities of a brother?
I guess. And mischievous masked dark ninja, and this guy doesn't actually wear a mask, but I guess it's because he hides certain aspects of himself.
Shala, don't we all wear masks?
Yeah, so there's your mask quote for the day. Okay. Anyway, as a complete side note, every ninja also has an animal companion that you can have, you know, you can actually dress up like as a side game, mini game. You can put different backgrounds on them and give them different attire, like, you know, you can put a little mask on them or, you know, some kind of adornment, a little ninja outfit or whatever. The guy that I played through with has a frog whose name is Kermit. I died. He has Kermit the Frog for his pet.
Hello.
This entertained me for probably a lot longer than it should have.
Yeah. He's holding him captive.
But it was kind of the most awesome thing for a while, and I just kind of like died laughing at this. So anyway, I played in that kind of staring at a train wreck way right at first, but fortunately or unfortunately, depending upon how you look at it, the translations improved as the game progressed, probably because they got money for better translators. I don't know.
Throughout the projects? one of them found some change in the couch. So they were able to get subject verb agreement for a couple of windows.
Well, yeah, like some of it was just really, really terrible translation job. It was so awesome. And because I studied Japanese for a while, I can understand what they were trying to say and how they had translated it incorrectly. I actually used to help Japanese people with their English via a cross-lingual blog. Hmm. So that's something I have in my past. So this is particularly funny to me because I have studied the language.
Yeah, you can see the ropes.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, while the plot line is super predictable, the focus is more on, of course, the interactions between the characters rather than on the larger picture. It actually reminded me a lot of years of role playing, which I used to do online via instant messenger programs when I couldn't play D&D anymore. Mm-hmm. And often that focused more on all the characters and how they intermingled and reacted to each other, too, even though, of course, there were always larger plots going on. The game was more like a backseat version of a roleplay where you do a lot of reading, you sometimes play a minigame, you occasionally have to choose a response to what's going on that affects the ending, but mostly you're just kind of reading, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. In the end, I actually liked the game and played through two more of the main stories and multiple spin-off stories that are shorter and have 1 to 3 chapters versus the 11 chapters for the main tales.
Yeah.
When I was talking to people about it, because, you know, this was my first time playing a dating sim, and I was like, okay, now I have to tell everybody about this and see what they think. I actually found out that a lot of people that I know have actually played dating sims and or like them a lot. And so, you know, that was kind of a surprise to me.
Yeah.
I actually got into a really good discussion with Micah, who had been on the multiplayer just a bit ago, about why he liked playing them. He said that it allows you to see different perspectives and behaviors and reflect those things back onto your own life and consider how you can improve your relationships to people in the real world. And he had actually talked about some sim he had played, I don't know what the name of it was, where it's a dating sim inside of a school full of people who have disabilities. So there's like amputees who have missing legs or missing arms or this or that kind of, you know, physical or mental disability that, you know, you can fall in love with these people and you have to deal with the drama of these things they're going through. So, I mean, in that particular case, that definitely applies. And so I would say that since I'm somebody who tends to absorb information and then just kind of apply everything I can to my life, that kind of is a valid reason to me. But more so in my case, I think a major aspect of otome games in specific is the appreciation of the little things. The people falling in love in these games, like I said, always freak out at the slightest thing, from a nice word to, oh my God, he hugged me, you know?
Senpai noticed me, yes.
Yeah, but the thing is, this is similar to how kids have innocent excitement about the world at large. And I think that we as adults, particularly jaded adults, tend to overlook these things that actually are very important and need to be remembered and appreciated for what they are. And so since that's something that I personally try to strive for, the appreciation of what I have, whatever it may be, playing this was actually kind of refreshing because it made me step back and go, you know, I really don't react like that at all. And, you know, in some cases, yes, I know that's like because this is an over-exaggerated response, but the whole kernel of this is really that appreciation that's behind that. So I played that. And like I said, I actually enjoyed it. I'm not like gonna go out and play every dating sim in the world. I will probably still keep playing this one, but you know, like.
So I've got two questions for you around this. Most of my problems with dating sims kind of hinge on two things: the erotic content, which I'm fine with titillation; it's okay, but some of it just kind of seems. I don't know, like if a game, the stuff that's explicitly pornographic, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. And then also the whole notion of your relationship with this person can be boiled down to kind of a whole, like a score, right? That you increase by giving them a thing, and that eventually they're a machine that after you put enough coins into it, it dispenses sex and affection.
Well, the thing about this particular game is that no matter what you choose throughout the game, they still fall in love with you. It's mm-hmm. just the ending changes. It's just how they react to you is a little bit different depending upon how you treat them, which is understandable. And insofar as, you know, sex games, like that's a whole other genre of hentai games.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I haven't played one of those before, and I don't know that I'm interested in doing so.
Yeah.
But
So my question would like around this, like mm-hmm. this does not have like any explicitly like what's the word, eroge content?
No, it's just like I said, I mean, the largest portion of the game is just, you know, some sort of drama, some sort of thing where you're trying to figure out more about the person and you go through and, you know, like this whole story unfolds and you end up falling in love with them and whatever. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
you know, like I think they like at least in the ones that I played, like you don't even kiss the character until like the end of the game. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, yeah, it's whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Like, you know, if that's how it articulates, and like, are like, if you're finding out more about them, because like the closest thing I think of is like a BioWare game, you know, which mm-hmm. has
for Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto a little bit less so for the
Grand you know, Theft Love
for the oh no for the reason for the reason that I the you know I'm going to lay out here is that like I like a BioWare dating kind of aspect to it, like the romance lines. Less because it's kind of like, oh, I'm gonna get to see some digital side boob, and more for like, you know, just like these are interesting characters. I want to hear more of their story, and you know, well, like in a lot of ways, doing that in a BioWare game is saying, hey, you, I'm actually really interested in seeing more of this story, or you know, learning how you act at this emotional extreme. And well, yeah, good.
Well, in this particular game, like I said, a large portion of it is just like. Trying to figure out more about the character and peeling back the familiar, like from being complete strangers, learning more about them and becoming more comfortable with them through trial and tribulation, and then having them tell you eventually or show you eventually more about what their driving forces are for their purpose in this particular war that's going on in the game and that kind mm-hmm. of a thing. So that's more what's going on. And then, of course, the little moments where they're surprised that you give a crap about them and that kind of a thing. That kind of interaction and then just learning about each other aspect is really what's more emphasized in this game than anything else.
Yeah.
But I would definitely, like, if I heard about a dating sim that was actually more complicated, definitely I would be interested in playing it, because this is, like I said, a very simple story, a very simple setup, a very simple, you know, choice. You know, it's not a very complicated engine that they're running here. And if they had a more complex simulation, then that would be more interesting, I think. But still keeping it where it's like, no, it's not about like, here, let's have some digital side boob, as you say, but just like, you know, more about the relationships. I would be okay with that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like really simplified down to the fact that you are outright choosing at the start which storyline you want to pursue, right?
Yeah,
by selecting them like a Street Fighter character as opposed to, you know, yeah. coming across them organically throughout the narrative. Well,
and that's pretty much like this particular game is so simplified that you pick which character you want to have the story focus on. It's not like I'm pretty sure that if you were to play like a PC dating sim or something like that, that it would have the ability to, you know, go throughout the game and then just your decisions end up influencing who you end up with or whatever. Mm-hmm. Actually, when I had mentioned playing Long Story a while back, I had said I had played that visual novel too. Like mm-hmm. there's a romance aspect to that too. Yeah. And that one, you don't have to pick a character. You just, you know, you interact with the characters and then you sort of kind of have a quasi romantic relationship with them, while you're trying to figure out this mystery. So that one's a little bit more complex too than this particular dating sim was, but but I do have one more funny story about that is related to me playing this dating sim.
Go ahead.
I listened to the Amnesia episode of WoW, and then I picked up the game to play, having only fiddled about a little bit in it previously. Yeah. And I was simultaneously, as I was going through Amnesia, playing Destiny Ninja on my phone, because it's really easy to glance down during the loading screens and just read a little bit of the text and then move on. So like I was sitting here romancing a ninja and, you know, like fighting my weird amnesia issues and creepy things happening and freakouts about darkness. So that was kind of awesome. And when I first came across the monster, I said, oh shit, I'm totally going to turn this off because no. But then I was like, but wait, let's see how he kills me and how many different ways I can die before I turn off this game. Okay, what happens when I run after him? So I run after him and he disappears and I'm mad because I wanted to die. I wanted to see what had happened when you ran after him. And I was like, oh, now I'm pretty sure like now that I go into the wine cellar or whatever comes next, like I'm sure he's going to follow me and I'm going to die there. And that's cool because then I can see it and then be like, okay, that's what happens. Now I know. But
I can't. Yeah, like, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to spoil that great game for people.
Well, you know, like I'm sure that first encounter was, oh my god, it's a thing, freak out, and you know, at first I was like, oh shit, there's that thing, and then I was like, let's follow it. What happens? So that's kind of my natural reaction to stuff, which is, you know,
yeah. Well, I mean, it's like that's why you take dates to horror movies, right?
Wait, why?
To go follow monsters around in the theater?
No. I'm mixing the dating sim with the horror game.
Yeah,
it's right? Like, oh, the idea is you go to a horror movie with somebody, so you have an excuse to grab onto them. I was like, there's the scary. It's funny. Yeah, at least that was the theory in high school. I don't know how that holds as a 30-year-old person, but
I don't know. Like, whenever I watched a horror movie, I was always like, and then. Yeah, that's stupid. And yeah, I knew that was coming. And oh god, this is terribly acted. Like I'm one of those terrible people that can just sit there and stare at it and be making fun of it the entire time. And it's not like I'll do that with people who actually want to watch the movie, but like, you know, I'll be thinking it.
It's something you
don't say it. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like horror movies, it has to be a good one. I don't know.
Well, yeah, but hopefully it's good. It doesn't matter what kind of movie it is. It should probably be good.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Was Amnesia your other game?
Well, I've been playing a bunch of different stuff, but I've talked about them all before. Like, I finished the rest of Saturday Morning RPG. I replayed Among the Sleep. I did bits of Megabyte Punch and Titan Souls demo. I co-opted in Dungeon Defenders, Double Dragon Neon, Guild Wars 2, Magicka. It's been like 2 months since I've been on the show, so I did a lot. So... But I'll just say, yes, we can say Amnesia and Destiny Ninja. That's fine. And that can go on my record. I have no shame for that.
And you're still on the first hub in Amnesia?
Oh, yeah, like I did that part, and then I was like, oh, never mind. He ran away. I'm not interested anymore. I wanted to die. I'm sad.
Nice.
I'll die another day.
I wanted to romance that monster.
He's just misunderstood. I'm sure he's
the dark
and
mysterious one. Yeah, it's just a mask.
Yes, he's a mischievous dark masked ninja. Okay. That's why he vanished without a trace.
Don't we all wear monsters?
Yeah. Moving on.
Anyway, Ben, how about you?
So I'm going to be one note. I've just been playing The Witcher 3, but I've continued my progress. I think I'm level 18 now. Hmm. So
hey.
if you're tracking, the levels are progressing slower and slower. So I hope that's because of the leveling system and not me not playing it as much. But it's super fun still. Yeah. I haven't got bored with it yet. Just doing a whole bunch of side quests. And yeah. What?
You're doing side quests and you're not bored? That must be very nice side quests, because I don't know, I'm not much of a side quester. If I can't like independently go explore something, I get bored with side quests.
Yeah, I draw the parallel to this for this game with Knights of the Old Republic, where they did seem to put a lot of time into the side quests, where if it's not, it might not be critical to any sort of main mission that you're doing, but it'll at least tell you more about the world, or like give you a look into like a new creature or something like that. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I think one of the things they do really well, comparing it to Far Cry 4, since I just came off of that, is like Far Cry 4, you like loot bodies or whatever, and you know, pick up plants and everything. And then there's literally a button to just sell everything to a merchant, so that you just get money or whatever. You know, everything just translates into money, and then money's kind of useless there. In The Witcher 3, you know, they kind of try and make it more meaningful, where like you can pick up plants and you can pick up like remains from bodies and stuff, which will literally be like brains or tongue or like remains and stuff. The way they try and make it meaningful is like you have alchemy branch that you can use like plants to try and make like potions and stuff like that. And then they also have crafting, where you can try and make new armors based on different inventory things that you have. And like a lot of the items, you can break it down into baser components and kind of mix and match it. So it's kind of a similar feel to Minecraft.
Hmm. So are you going to make a brain armor? If so, I want to see it.
I haven't found the specs for that yet, but once I do, I will make that. But the only complaint I have with it is the only thing I don't like about the armor is there's a level cap to it. So if you make an armor, you have to be at a certain level before you can wear it. And so I think that kind of takes away some of it, especially because usually when you get to that level, you will have found armor that's better than the thing that you're crafting. So I have a feeling that the armor that you're crafting won't get valuable until the very end of the game, when like you've kind of capped out on the armor that people will drop. And then the only way to make better one is through crafting. So,
well, see, I would think that it would make more sense if you just could not skillfully craft the thing to make it so powerful until said level. So that would be a moot issue, you know, like you have to be a pretty high level of craftsperson to be able to make this armor that is so badass that you have to be XYZ level. So you would have to be that level anyway to have the skill to craft it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is they don't have like level points associated with any of this. It's just like you're very much role playing with this game, where it's like you just have one character you're playing. Like like on the negative side, it's kind of like a closed branch where it's like you are playing this person. But on the upside, it kind of gives them the opportunity to have more character development for that character.
Yeah, like draw a comparison between this and the crafting in Dragon Age Inquisition, because I've heard a lot of people complain about the crafting in that, but I don't know how these two like are distinct from each other.
So yeah, honestly, the crafting, I didn't get too deep on it in Dragon Age Inquisition, because there was one point where when you get to your main base or whatever, there's a character who says like, oh yeah, I'll craft anything for you, just bring me the spec sheet or whatever. And I never found what I needed to give her, so then I never did that, which, yeah, it was kind of a bummer. Whereas with this one, it seems like there's even like side quests where you go to specifically look for, I keep calling it spec sheets. I can't remember.
A schematic.
Yeah. So there's even side missions where you like go to specific schools of craftsmen and like look for different schematics, and so it'll be like kind of scattered across the world. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just fun.
Well, that would still annoy me though. It's like I can make this thing, but I can't put it on. That's kind of okay.
Yeah, I'm not happy about that part.
They need to take a you know, page from MMO crafting or something, because those pretty much have it down.
Maybe, I don't know. Like, because the crafting that I did last night, like, the there's like one armor that I can't make yet because I need a lower schematic before I can make the higher one. Like, but then the ones that I could make, a few of them were slightly better than the things that I had. So it might even, it might just be a balancing system where, you know, they're just trying to keep it in pace with what's being dropped. But yeah.
Okay.
One of the coolest things about the game is you have two swords, not just one sword.
Oh, the silver and the steel?
Yeah, you have one for killing humans, and you have one for killing monsters.
Yeah.
So this is my monster-killing sword.
Yeah, I don't know. It sounds really stupid, but yeah, it's just cool.
and like, he automatically pulls out the right one, right?
Yeah.
And you can switch between them. The wrong one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doink.
Well, yeah, yeah. That's it. Eventually, I'm going to start just repeating points that I heard on the Polygon quality control about this. But like, that indicates that he's like, that he knows what he's doing, right? Like, are you learning more about Geralt? Is that his name? Geralt?
Yeah.
As a character, like, is he? Does he eventually become more likable? Because everything that I've seen makes him kind of like a gruff voiced, you know, dude.
So I found out some of the narrative behind it. Apparently, like, there's like a Witcher school that, like, you're like put in as a kid. So
can we get a dating sim set there?
Yeah, I know.
So I think it's not dissimilar from like the idea of like the Jedi Academy, where it's like, or apparently, like, they can't reproduce after they become a Witcher,
and they
have mind control, and, you know, they can conjure fire. So it's very much like a Jedi. But part of it is they like purposely strip the people of emotions. So that's part of the reason why he kind of speaks in a monotone voice, and
and
why there's no dating sim there. Okay.
Well, there's there's some sexy content in the Witcher games, right?
There is.
I played a little smidgen of the first Witcher game and was frustrated with the controls, but anyway, I saw sexy part before I left, though.
I continue to be really interested in this. So these side quests, like, did you get a sense that they are kind of bolstering you narratively for whatever big conflict you're trying to resolve? Like, is it all kind of like feeding back into a bigger thing?
Again, I think it usually is just kind of one-offs where it's just kind of showing a different part of the world.
Yeah.
So like, one, for example, is like you go into a labyrinth where there is like somebody who had made really pungent cheese, and you had to go through a maze of cheeses. That sounds really weird.
Amnesia 3 sounds weird.
But, yeah. So the side quests are usually one-offs, but on top of that, they also have, like, bounty missions, where it's, like, you'll go to a part of the village, and they'll say, something is killing villagers here, and so you'll have to kind of go through almost like a procedural to figure out, you know, like, it's almost like CSI, where you go to, like, a crime scene or whatever, and instead of, like, what Batman has with like the Dark Knight sense or whatever, there's the Witcher sense in this. So like you toggle that on or whatever, and you look for clues around the crime scene. It'll usually involve you like following, you know, a certain smell or following footprints or something like that, or looking for clues. And then usually you have like some sort of fight that you have with a big monster that you encounter. Every time you encounter a monster, it might be after you encounter it the first time, you'll get like a index, and you have like a basically like a Wikipedia, but for the monsters, and it'll say kind of what their different weaknesses are. So like kind of what sort of spells you should use against them, what sort of there's different oils you can put on your swords that make them more effective against whatever you're fighting. So you can figure out what works best against it.
Can you set your sword on fire?
Unfortunately not. That would be really cool though. Hopefully they have that later in the game. So far the oils have not appeared to be flammable, unfortunately.
It's more like if you're trying to fight a nausea monster, you put some peppermint on there. If you're trying to fight a headache monster, you put some lavender. It's all good.
I
did want to ask about the Witcher sense. Does it tingle? Like, how does it show up on your screen that you have figured out a thing?
it kind of zooms in the center of the camera, and everything else kind of goes out of focus, and it gets a little bit darker, I think. And then, but then things are highlighted. So if you use it, you can see where, like barrels or things that you can pick up items, like those will become highlighted as well. But they distinguish between like those and mission critical things. They'll have a different color outline. So,
yeah. Cool.
And then one of the cool things too is they adjust the sound when you go into the Witcher Sense too, where so like all the ambient noise is gone and you hear very specific sound effects, like maybe cracks of twigs in the forest or something of like something far away, or you know.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool too.
Like filtering out irrelevant sound so you can hear exactly what you want to hear.
Yeah.
Kind of like when you zero in with your sniper scope and such in Sniper Elite, it's it.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Cool.
Neat. Yeah. So do you think this is going to carry you through till June the 23rd?
Yeah, most definitely. That's only a couple weeks away, 2 weeks away from today. So, yeah, I think for sure there's enough content to keep me there.
So, yeah. Oh, it's like refueling a jet in midair. Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I'm going to probably keep playing it tonight after we record the podcast.
So, awesome. Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm happy to hear that you like it. For me, I really have just been playing Danganronpa. I told myself that I would play D4 over the weekend, but I got really busy and depressed. And it's like, oh, well, I'm just going to like lay on a couch and play Danganronpa, I suppose.
Wait, what's D4?
That is the game from the creator of Deadly Premonition.
Which keeps on popping up in my Steam list, so I think they want me to play it.
I think they do, too. I think everybody ought to play it. I haven't even played it yet, and I'm sure that everybody needs to play it. I have a lot of faith in this this director, Swery. It looks pretty cool to me, but I kind of want to like dedicate an uninterrupted block of time to doing as much of that game in a stretch as I can. But yeah, so I've been playing Danganronpa 2 as I kind of started last week, and I forget how much of it actually like went into detail. I think last week was mostly kind of concluding thoughts on Danganronpa 1. The premise of this one is still like you are a group of high school students and you're trapped in a place, and you know the rule is if you can kill somebody and not get caught, you go free. But if you get caught in this class trial, then you are executed. If you fail to find the right person, then everybody gets executed and that person walks free. Right. Except this time you're trapped on a tropical island as opposed to being locked inside of a high school. So there's a little bit more diversity of locations, that you can go to.
So it's becoming more like Battle Royale than less like it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. it's becoming a little bit more Battle Royale, a little less funny games.
Can you hit them with a coconut?
You know, I'm only on the third chapter, so I can't say that you can't hit somebody in the head with a coconut.
I just see Gilligan's Island. I need it to happen. Someone needs to be hit with a coconut.
It's like a resort kind of place. Like it's like South Pacific resort kind of thing. Like have like amenities, and you still have the bear, the Monokuma who's tormenting you. I can't say that I like Danganronpa 2 as much yet. I don't like the characters as much, and you know, obviously in this kind of game you're gonna get a little bit of like, oh, these are just kind of caricatures of people, and eventually the details come out to where you're able to you know, have a little bit of empathy for them, but like everybody kind of seems to be just like really unlikable so far. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. maybe that's a trick that is doing to set that up and then, you know, humanize them as they go. But yeah, I've not really found anybody. Cause like in the first one, you like everybody had like kind of like a baseline level of like approachability, even the bad ones. Mm-hmm. And you were really sad because like, okay, if one of them gets murdered, that's sad too, you know, too, but like you kind of are dreading finding the right person in the trial because like, well, I don't want that person to go away. I want to hear more of their story, or I don't feel like I got, kind of enough of a sense for them before they go. But if you solve the crime, then they're executed. Right.
Yeah.
And you know, at least in the second one, the motives are a little bit more diverse, but I can't give more details on that without spoiling a crap ton of it. So, it ends up being, kind of a wash there. In general, I think that it's, that Danganronpa 2 is just a little bit more provocative with, the sexual stuff, and specifically like violence against women, which is really kind of a bummer. Mm-hmm. There's a like this, so Monokuma, that's this bear that you know, it's black and white. And but he isn't introduced for a little while. Initially, there's this kind of like pink bunny character called Manomi, who is there, and she is kind of like saying, "Hey, we're all going to exist happily here in this tropical paradise," and trying to force everybody to get along. And then Monokuna comes along and kind of like dominates her in this crazy way, like just keeps on attacking her, and like they make a very big point of like showing him attacking her, like, "Oh no, it hurts," and like he forces her to wear a diaper and stuff. It's just kind of like I understand, you know, just like to baby fire, right? And it's like I understand that they're trying to like make it unsettling or whatever, but like it's a little bit much to just kind of like that the game takes delight in showing that. It's like unseemly in a way. Like, I know I'm not supposed to like this character either, but like it extends even to the main characters. Like, there's one character who's like this really meek nurse girl, but every time, you know, she's very clumsy, but every time she falls over, there's like this very lovingly rendered like picture of her like laying with her legs wide open, face up to the screen with something obscuring her. It's like, oh, this is just cheesecake that they're putting in here for that.
Yeah.
And it works into a case, but like they didn't do that in the first one, and it felt like they didn't have to rely on that to make the game feel menacing or whatever. And I'm just kind of like rolling my eyes when I get to it, and it becomes less defensible as they keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of, for me, that kind of a setup, like when you first said the first one, I'm like, I can guess just from trends in you know, mm-hmm. horror, or that type of genre, whatever you want to classify that is, mm-hmm. that the second one would kind of unfortunately be like that. That tends to be the route that kind of media ends up going in.
Yeah.
Even if the first one might be good. So mm-hmm. hopefully it stops, although I don't think it will. Or at least is passable in other ways to where that's not so big a deal.
Yeah. I mean, just like, and like, hopefully they, like, as the plot gets moving and they feel like they don't have to rely on that kind of stuff, maybe it'll get better as it goes. But like, those first couple chapters are really rough for that. And lest it sound like I'm just whining about the content and Cole, you stupid idiot, why don't you, you know, just talk about the game, damn it, or whatever. Like the ways that they have, the things that they've done to complicate the gameplay are a little bit, you know, kind of goofy too. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you're in the middle of the trials and they still have the nonstop debate kind of things where you have to physically shoot truth bullets, like your evidence at the particular phrases that go across the screen. And it's remarkable, right? Like the way that the game uses typography is fantastic to, you know, kind of represent this stuff. Like they have like the white noise, the things people say over top of that will block your shot that kind of like string over top of it. But you actually see the text moving across the screen. You have to shoot that and you have to like move the white noise out of the way. Like all of that continues to be really cool. And like the particularly persistent white noise sticks around for a couple more clicks, which is cool mm-hmm. in this game as compared to the first mm-hmm. one. But like they changed the rhythm games, and I was already not that down with the rhythm game. Like the hangman challenge where you have to, like, it went from just kind of highlighting the right letter and pressing a button to shoot it down to like, now you have a whole bunch of letters that are on a collision course for each other, and you have to like rearrange them. So not only do the right letters hit, but also no letter hits one that's not of its kind. It's like a whole bunch of stuff that just kind of seems like just barely related to what it's trying to make you convey to you. And it's like the ones that are around like the debate, that all seems pretty fine to me. Cause like, oh, you have to think on your feet and choose this kind of stuff, and it's a little bit rhythmic, but some of it's just a little bit like they added this in for the sake of making this more game like when in reality, like, it's a perfectly fine visual novel. Like, you're already doing, you know, Phoenix Wright meets 9 hours, 9 persons, nine doors. Like, there's enough good game there. You don't have to be insecure about it. Yeah. But that said, I'm less than halfway through it, so. And it's to the point where when somebody dies and when somebody is, you know, has to be executed, I am liking the motives that they give, and I'm sad that they're gone. You know, it's kind of like, oh, I would really like to know more about them, but I'm not going to get a chance. So, womp. Any other questions about that?
No.
All right.
Again, I feel like I would have a better understanding if I played it for a little bit myself. But
I suppose
it sounds cool, though.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, just it's a visual novel kind of thing, right? Like, you're reading some story and you're going around and interacting with stuff, but the majority of the time, it's just kind of like asking you to pay attention, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's, you know, quizzing you on information that's been put there. It's, you know, giving you kind of like evidence and stuff that you have to kind of like put stuff together for yourself. So like think about like a point and click adventure game, except that really, really leans heavily on text as opposed okay. to as opposed to observing the environment and mixing pieces together. The best of them, the really good ones, they have like really good character development in them as well, to where, you know, if the stakes are high and somebody dies, you're invested in it and you kind of care about it.
Yeah. Not to sound like a broken record, but it kind of reminds me of, there is one mission in Knights of the Old Republic where mm-hmm. it's like a procedural where you have to investigate, you know,
yeah.
who did what and how. Yeah. So, mm-hmm.
yeah, I mean, and like that's why I like a lot of BioWare stuff. Like there's, you know, the fact that they're willing to let a lot of story play out over dialogue and the way, you know, and the way things shake out there, like the best quests and those that are, you know, memorable and engaging because of either the weird thing that happens or the weird people who are involved in it. That's a little bit what happens in these kinds of games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. We're doing, we announced this earlier this week, as of the time people hear this, but we have the next Watch Out for Fireballs poll up for the summer game.
Yay!
It is not a JRPG. We're doing summer reading. It's visual novels.
Woohoo!
I know. So it's like 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, Ghost Trick, Hotel Dusk, or Phoenix Wright.
Cool. Yeah. I bet you're really excited.
I am very, like, I kind of curated this one. And Gary has played a couple of them, but it's like, I would really like to play one of these. I don't know which one I would like to play, so let's put it to the people. I think that no matter who wins, we all win. Yeah, so that's out there for Patreon backers.
Yay!
Yeah. You guys want to button it up? It's a little bit early.
Sure.
Cool. So this has been level number 108. Thank you so much for listening. I don't know how much I have by way of admin. If you want to follow us on Facebook, it's facebook.com/the level podcast. Each person who goes in there and does that, you know, gets access to kind of this cool community of people who talk in a constructive way. It's really great. It's a great place to be, and I'm really happy for everybody who is there. Also the subscriptions and iTunes and stuff like that, still working on getting the SoundCloud thing sorted out, but there is a SoundCloud account where all the new episodes go up. That is soundcloud.com/thelevelpodcast. I don't have all the old stuff up there yet. More accurately, I have it there. It just doesn't have the proper data to it, but that is a very time consuming thing, as I've always said, whenever it's come up, but that is a place where you can go. Did I miss anything?
Leave us a review.
Oh, yeah. Leave us a rating or review on iTunes. That is very helpful.
Also, you can hit us up on Steam. James Robinson did so much. And so I will probably be playing a game with him co-oping type mm-hmm. soonish.
Yeah, we have a Steam group, don't we?
Yeah.
Just look it up on Steam.
There's people there.
There
and
are.
They play games.
Yeah.
And they love to play games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Let's call it a night. I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I have been and will continue to be forever Telechon on Twitter and places.
And I have been and may continue to be Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Depends on what happens. Until next time, listen until after this. We will have some titles. Yeah. All right, so I've got a handful of titles. I'm not sure which. I want to gauge your guys' reactions.
Okay.
Don't we all wear masks? He's just misunderstood. Brain armor. Amnesia, a maze of cheeses.
Either of those last two is good.
Don't we all wear monsters?
Yeah, there you go.
Is that the one?
I like that.
Ben?
I'm good with any of the latter three.
Okay. Well, we'll leave it as a mystery. Well, I guess it's not a mystery because people will have seen this in their feed, so it's a mystery only to us.